the number one sports site in the world.
Big names.
Bold interviews. Bold interviews.
Beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio.
On Yahoo Sports Radio.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show.
With the one and only, the triple threat, the Big E.
Melissa Walker-Campbell. The 6 foot former Sooner women's basketball player.
She can post, pin, and produce with some of today and yesterday's biggest stars.
Alyssa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Get ready to go beyond the X's and O's
with today's star athletes, coaches, and sports figures.
This is the Big E Sports Show
right now.
Now from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Are you ready?
Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze.
Here she is, the one and only, the Big E, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome into Yahoo Sports Radio and the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night. I tell you what a week it has been in NBA free agency. It's been fast, it's been furious, and so many teams making key additions to their teams. And tonight we've got you covered with a full analysis and the breakdown. But up first, we're going to kick off our program with getting you ready for the start of the 2016 college football season. It is hard to believe. It is just around the corner. Teams will be back at it soon. And we're going to gear up for the big season ahead with one of the very best in our business. That, of course, he is a Big E favorite, Phil Steele, the publisher of Phil Steele, the magazine, and PhilSteele.com. So many questions we're looking forward to getting answered, like who's going to make the college football playoff and how he anticipates the season will play out. Good evening, Phil. I hope you've had a fantastic summer with the family.
I sure have. How about yourself, Alyssa?
Doing great. Lots of golf, so it keeps me busy. But let's talk some college football. We're here in the, the heart of the Big 12 conference. We are down here in Houston. Who is your favorite to win the Big 12 title this year?
Well, I'm going with the Oklahoma Sooners. Now, the one negative that I have with Oklahoma is the last four times they have been ranked in the preseason top five, they have not even finished in the top 15. In fact, twice finished the season unranked. So when they have lofty preseason expectations, they have not done well. But with what happened to Baylor, Oklahoma really has a pretty clear path to getting to the title game and winning the Big 12. You look at quarterback Baker Mayfield's back. They've got P. Ryan and Mixon at running back, solid receiving core, and offensive line led by Orlando Brown at left tackle. They have about 22-rated offensive line. On the defensive side, they've got plenty of all-star caliber players, including my number four secondary in the country. And Bob Stoops' team is always solid on special teams. They're solid on special teams. My number five rated special teams in the country. And when you look at the schedule this year, they get Ohio State early in the year, where Ohio State's a very young team playing its first road game. They play Houston out of the box. I actually have Oklahoma favored in all 12 games this year, and I expect them to win the Big 12.
And I was going to say, do you think the schedule does play in their favor, as you had just mentioned, playing Ohio State early, and then, of course, right here in Houston?
Yeah, that's a big game early to get Ohio State. I think Ohio State's going to be playing its best ball at the end of the year when they play teams like Michigan State and Michigan, determining the Big Ten title. Ohio State could very well still win the Big Ten this year, but the fact Oklahoma catches the and Ohio State's the least experienced team in the country, number 128 out of 128, three returning starters on offense, three on defense, first road trip, third game of the season. Nice advantage for Oklahoma to have.
And your impressions of the Oklahoma Sooners offensively, you had just highlighted talking about Heisman Trophy candidate and quarterback Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, they have my number five rated offense overall in the country this year. And the offensive line with Orlando Brown and Drew Samia at the tackle spot is solid. They're solid at center with Alvarez. And then you look at the running backs. P. Ryan and Mixon, one of the best running back combos in the entire country. They had in a Penn State transfer, a wide receiver, and Geno Lewis to go with D.D. Westbrook. So they are loaded at receiver and tight end solid. Mark Andrews, 6'5", 244, one of the best tight ends in the country. So they are good at all four of the positions on offense and one of the best offenses in the country.
He is one of our favorites, the publisher of Phil Steele, the magazine, PhilSteele.com. Reach out to our audience nationally, Phil, and where can they connect with you online?
Online, it's at PhilSteele.com. That's STEELE.com. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at PhilSteele042. That's at PhilSteele042. And you can also actually get the magazine and your iPad or iPhone through the Apple Store or on your Android device through Google Play, and that saves a little wear and tear on the magazine during the course of the season.
Absolutely. Hey, we are zeroing in on the Big 12 Conference right now. Specifically, Phil's top pick is the Oklahoma Sooners, and let's take time to give some credit to the offensive coordinator in Lincoln Riley. He is back for his second season, and I thought did an amazing job reviving the offense. How was he able to do it so quickly, and obviously was very effective?
Yeah, and I like how he adapted. You look at the first half of the season, Oklahoma was not running the ball all that effectively. But once they lost to Texas, Riley opted to turn it more over to P. Ryan and Mixon in the second half of the year. And you saw Oklahoma get huge chunks of yards on the ground, which in turn opened it up for the pass game. Mm-hmm. And Oklahoma had the most dynamic offense in college football over the last eight games of the season last year after that loss to Texas. So you look at the fact that Riley came in, it took him a little bit of time to get his feet wet, but he is one of the best offensive coordinators out there. And I'll go back to two summers ago. I was talking to Gil Brandt, and Gil said, hey, offensive coordinator on the rise, Lincoln Riley, and then a year later he's at Oklahoma.
Okay, one more quick hit on the Oklahoma Sooners. Where do you see them most vulnerable? I mean, is it defensively? Because they did lose some key players.
Yeah, they did. And really, when you look at the linebacking core, I rate them number 31 in the country. They lose Stryker at the outside linebacker spot, Dominique Alexander at the inside linebacker, Devontae Bond also gone from there. And you look at the replacements, Tay Evans is a guy that was not one of the top recruits coming out of high school. He's a solid sophomore, though. My number 82 rated linebacker. So the Tay Evans and Jordan Evans are the new guys at middle linebacker. And of the eight units on the team, I rate them number 31 in the country at linebacker, which is their lowest of any of the units. It tells you, first of all, how talented Oklahoma is, but then also a little bit of drop off from the other positions, which mostly rank in the top 10.
Is TCU the biggest threat to the Oklahoma Sooners in the Big 12 Conference?
Yeah, when I was writing the magazine in April, I probably had Baylor up there. I had Baylor about the number 8 team in the country, but now with the Art Briles situation and 9 recruits leaving, and the fact that the magazine was able to go to the press June 2nd, a little bit later than everybody else, I did move TCU up to the number 2 team. And here's what I like about the Frogs, Alyssa.
Okay.
When you look at them defensively last year, they only had 5 returning starters, but lost a couple to injury, and they gave up 398 yards per game. Now, Gary Patterson always has one of the top defenses in the country, and didn't really have that last year. Of course, his offense scored so quickly, 563 yards per game. But this year, they've got 8 starters back on the defensive side. So I think they're going to have one of the top 20 defenses in the country, if not even stronger than that. And offensively, everybody analyzes a team. They look at the quarterback, running back, receiver. If we do that with TCU, they lose Trevon Boykin. They lose Aaron Green at running back. They lose Josh Doctson at receiver. You say they're in for a rebuilding year. But I like the replacements. Kenny Hill comes in at QB. And I remember in the first year of Trevon Boykin, they were thinking of moving him to receiver in 2014, yet he adapted to the offense. They went from 25 points per game to 46 points per game. Kenny Hill did a good job at Texas A&M. I think he'll do a good job with this offense. At running back, they've got Kyle Hicks and Sean Nixon, two of the top running backs in the Big 12. And then a receiver, they get Deontay Gray back from injury. They add in my number 7, number 8 rated JUCOs and Ryan Parker and Taj Williams. They add an LSU transfer and John Diarce. I think they're going to have an underrated receiving core this year, and the offensive line looks solid. So despite losing their top quarterback, running back, and receivers, TCU still should have a very potent offense. They get Oklahoma at home October 1st,
right,
which is why I think they're Oklahoma's biggest threat to winning the Big 10 this year, or the Big 12 this year.
Well, that's one of the big question marks coming into the season for TCU, is breaking in a new quarterback. So are you saying that the Texas A&M transfer, Kenny Hill, he has definitely solidified that? Because I thought Foster Sawyer might be in the hunt too.
They are both battling for it. I project Kenny Hill is going to win the job, though. Sawyer is a guy that's got 6'5", 228. He's taller than Hill, and he is definitely in the mix at the quarterback spot. I think no matter which guy wins it, like I said, when Boykin was there 2 years ago, they were thinking, let's move this guy to wide receiver, and he came in and adapted pretty well to that offense and had a big year.
Okay, and what about the offensive line for the TCU Horned Frogs?
Up front on the offensive line, they've got 2 starters back. They do lose some key players, but Patterson has always done well. If you go back to his track record with inexperienced offensive lines, He usually does extremely well. Now, I still rate him, despite their inexperience level on the offensive line, as my number 42 rated O-line in the country. Joseph Noteboom comes in at the left tackle spot. I think he's one of the better left tackles out there. Pryor and Schlottman both have starting experience. They started 5 and 4 games last year. And Avante Collins, who's filling in at right tackle, is a guy that's got 23 career starts under his belt. So it's an offensive line, a little more experience than normal, and I like the fact that Patterson, when he has an inexperienced offensive line, usually fields a pretty good group.
Hey, it's our 2016 college football preview. We're going one-on-one with Phil Steele, the publisher of...
Don't ever miss a moment of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Have you downloaded our brand-new Yahoo Sports Radio mobile app?
What will happen next?
Just go to yahoosportsradio.com.
Or search for us in your app store.
This is a task you must manage.
Download the app. It's simple. You just press play.
What would we all give?
And there we are. Never miss a moment.
I'm with you, dude.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell,
the Big E.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. We'd love to connect with you. We are interactive. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. You can always go back and listen to this entire interview at podcastarena.com. podcastarena.com. Click on the YSR tab as we are going one-on-one with Phil Steele, the publisher of Phil Steele, the magazine, philsteele.com. And a moment ago, you were talking about you had very high projections and expectations for Baylor, but what was your initial reaction after you heard and learned about the fallout and the scandal with the Bears?
Well, I'm always the guy that just worries about the effects on the field, and on-the-field effects here for Baylor have turned out to be rather large. You look at the fact that Art Briles is a guy that never operated with a playbook, and I thought was brilliant in the way that they ran the offense and ran the team. Now, Jim Grobe's a guy that can get the most out of the talent on hand. I mean, he took Wake Forest to the Orange Bowl. That right there speaks volumes. But since the magazine went to the press now, 9 Baylor recruits, assignees this year from February, are not going to be on the Baylor team this year. They basically lost half the recruiting class. And 3 of the guys I had as projected starters, Trendavian Dixon, a wide receiver who was in for the spring, B.J. Autry on the offensive line, and Jeremy Falk at nose tackle. They lost a bunch of other recruits who would have been into the mix this year. I think, though, those effects of losing all those recruits would be more of a down-the-line effect. When you lose half a recruiting class like that, they still have Seth Russell at QB. They still have Shaq Linwood and Johnny Jefferson at running back. Katie Cannon still back at receiver. There were question marks coming into the year about the offensive and defensive line. Those question marks are still there. But the linebacking core looks solid. The defensive backs look good. And I think Baylor, which I was originally thinking was a double-digit win team this year, that's why I had them in my preseason top 10, probably drops back to that 8-9 win level. But I'm not expecting a drastic drop-off.
Wow, a ton of uncertainty. I mean, do you even think that they'll finish in the top 25?
I did put them in my top 25 at the start of the year, and I think the possibility does exist. You look at their opening games, Northwestern State, SMU, Rice, and they get Oklahoma State at home. Their road games this year are Iowa State, West Virginia, both fall into the winnable category. And by the time you get to that Oklahoma State game and then into the meat of the schedule, which is October, November, the team will have almost over half a year to adjust to Jim Grobe as the head coach and anything else that's thrown in there. So I think the timing of the games, whereas they have just one ranked opponent in the first 6 games of the season, will help them out a lot this year.
Okay, let's shift gears. Let's talk about the Texas Longhorns and Charlie Strong. How much pressure is he feeling in year 3? His overall record is 11-14.
Another losing season, Charlie Strong will be out of there. There's no doubt about that. But I am not expecting that this year. I think when you look at Texas, they are my number one most improved team in the country, and they're benefiting a little bit from this Baylor fallout because I mentioned 9 Baylor recruits aren't signing there. Well, players like Devin Duvernay, who was my number 5 rated wide receiver out of high school, has signed at Texas Tech, can play right away. Donovan Duvernay, his brother, has signed at Texas and can play right away. Hudson and is on the offensive line. So they've added four Baylor recruits to the Texas team, making their recruiting class even stronger. And I think two areas are going to be vastly improved for Texas this year. First of all, defensively, Charlie Strong knows defense. You go back to his days at Florida, you go back to his days at Louisville. This is a guy that always had a top-notch defense. Well, when he came in here, he had a my way or the highway philosophy, and basically a lot of players left the program. That left him a little thin on the defensive side of the ball. And last year, they surprisingly gave up 453 yards per game. But this year, eight returning starters. I like the size inside with Boyette and Ford at defensive tackle. I like Malik Jefferson, a linebacker. I mean, he was the number one rated linebacker recruit out of high school last year. Started nine games, lived up to that billing last season. The secondary is loaded with size and speed and starting experience. They got about nine guys that have started in the secondary. I think they'll come up with a quality first four. They should have one of the most improved offenses in the country, or defenses. Offensively, when I look at them, I can see a transition much like TCU did a couple years ago. Remember, TCU coming off a 4-8 season, it only averaged 25 points per game. They shifted the offense and all of a sudden went to 46 points per game. Well, with Texas this year, they did, moving to the veer-and-shoot offense under Sterling Gilbert, and Shane Buechele is really a nice fit for this offense. He's a true freshman QB, looked great in the spring. I think he wins a starting job and gives them that passing game they've been lacking. They still have Tyrone Swoops on hand, give them that 18-wheeler package out of the quarterback spot. They got a couple of 250-pound running backs in Chris Warren and Donta Foreman, who I expect to wear teams down as the game goes on, and then have some big fourth quarters running the football. At receiver, John Burton on Devontae Foreman are back. They add in Devin Duvernay. The offensive line is a veteran group with Vahe Perkins and Williams all back. So overall, I think they'll have a much improved offense, a much improved defense, and the special teams was already is a unit that is probably my biggest question mark, because they don't rank in my top 40 in the country. But I think when you look at their talent and look at the schedule they have this year, they're poised for a big increase in the win total.
Talking about schedules, I look at October 8th. Of course, when they face my Oklahoma Sooners, you know I'm a proud Sooner. Are the Sooners going to get the bounce back this year and prevail?
Well, they should. It seems like every year that they're a big favorite over Texas. Texas rises up and beats them. But this year, Oklahoma, I think, will be a little bit prepared, having been beaten by the Longhorns last year. So I do like Oklahoma in that. They're a pretty good-sized favorite right now.
Okay, only have time to highlight one more team out of the Big 12 Conference. Let's give some love to Mike Gundy and the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Are they a top 25 team?
The potential is definitely there for Oklahoma State to get in the top 25. The question mark resides in the schedule. Now, when you look at Oklahoma State defensively, last year they gave up 439 yards per game. They've got seven starters back on defense. Top players are Vincent Taylor at defensive tackle, Jordan Burton at the star position. I don't think they're going to have one of the best defenses in the country, but it will be an improved unit. Now, offensively, their run game was poor last year. They only averaged 3.6 yards per carry. Chris Carson's back, but they add in Barry Sanders from Stanford. And I like the fact that he's a guy that can break tackles and he's elusive, because they struggled on the offensive line last year. Now, the offensive line should be a much improved unit. They've got almost the entire group back from last season, about nine of the top 10 guys. And Mason Rudolph is back at quarterback. They are missing J.W. Walsh, however. Walsh was a guy that ran for 13 touchdowns, passed for 13 touchdowns last year, brought him in the red zone, brought him in when the offense was maybe needing a spark. They do not have J.W. Walsh this year, but Mason Rudolph is dangerous both running and passing the ball. I like the receiving game. In fact, James Washington, last year there was nine receivers in the Big 12 that had 1,000-plus yards receiving. James Washington's the only one back, maybe the top receiver in the Big 12 this year. Now, 2 years ago, they played a schedule where they had to play Oklahoma, TCU, Kansas State, and Baylor all on the road. They struggled to a 7-6 year. They play that same schedule this year. They're not going to struggle to 7-6. They're too talented, too experienced. But I've got them down for coming up with about 7-8 wins this season.
He is simply the best, publisher of Phil Steele, the magazine, philsteele.com. That, of course, is the great Phil Steele. And who is going to be in that college football playoff this year?
Well, I went with a little bit of a curveball for the playoffs. A lot of folks say that you can't get two teams from the same conference in there, but I did that this year.
Ah.
I think both the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going to struggle as far as coming up with the playoff teams. And I'm going with Oklahoma from the Big 12,
yeah,
the winner of the Florida State-Clemson game,
okay,
in the ACC, And then in the out of the SEC, I'm going with both Alabama and LSU, who have my number one and number two defenses in the country.
Very good. Phil, always a pleasure. I know we kept you long. Thank you so much for joining us. What a great way to kick off our number one right here at YSR. Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Alyssa. Great talking to you.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead right here in our number one at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. Up next, we're going to be visiting with the president of the Houston Astros. That is Reed Ryan.
You're listening to the Big East Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell,
the Big E.
Hey, Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans Studios at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and the 2016 MLB All-Star Game. It is next week, and good news for the Houston Astro fans because they've got a number of impressive players that will represent. A Big E favorite, of course, is second baseman in Jose Altuve, and looking forward to the game on Tuesday. Well, here with us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line is the president of the Astros, and that is Reed Ryan. Welcome back, Reed, on this Friday night.
Hey, great to be here today.
A lot to talk about, and before we highlight the All-Star Game and the Astro players, let's begin our conversation with a mid-season report on the Astros, who are currently second in the AL West. They got off to a sluggish start, but they continue to build momentum and are winning enough games to be in contention. Just your assessment overall, Reed, of the season up to this point.
Yeah, well, you know, we came into the season with some high expectations and really played well in spring training, and I think our guys were feeling it a little bit, and so we came out the first month of the season, April, and just we were terrible. The bullpen was bad, starting pitching wasn't good, and really outside of Altuve and Springer and Correa at the top of the order, the rest of the club didn't really do much. And so, I got to credit A.J. Hinch, our manager. He really just took the attitude that, hey, guys, we're going to go out and let's just win May. Let's just have more wins than we have losses, try to win each game, you know, win each homestand, and see where we end up. And, you know, lo and behold, we went out, we played really well in May, had a winning record, and then caught fire in June and had the second-best record in baseball. In July, we have a winning record and slowly have gone from, you know, the worst record in the American League to now being a half game out or tied, depending on what happens tonight, for the wild card, and only, you know, six games out of the AL West with half a season left. So we've played our way back into it, and, you know, got to credit the players and AJ and the coaching staff.
The president of the Houston Astros, Reed Ryan, is back with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can connect with us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports, and always go back and listen to this entire interview at podcastarena.com. Click on the YSR tab. Well, it really has for the Houston Astros. You guys have recovered beautifully, and it seems like you guys are in sync. What is your belief in terms of, does this make them enough to be a true contender? Because it appears, as you were talking about, the April woes are behind them, and you guys have had a very successful May and the month of June after a tough 7-17 start.
Well, when you look at our club, yeah, I think we're built to last. You know, our outfield is as dynamic as any outfield in baseball. From a power perspective, from a defensive perspective, throwing arms, ability to use our legs. And then you go up the middle of the diamond, and with Correa and Altuve, and look, Altuve is the best player in baseball. I mean, he is having a career year. He's hitting 350.
He is.
The power numbers, 14 home runs.
Yeah.
I mean, four straight all-star appearance and second straight start. This guy is a joy to watch. And then you look over at third base with what Luis Valbuena's done, you know, has his average up over 250, hitting for power now. We brought up A.J. Reed, a young first baseman, first-round pick, former, you know, college player of the year. Throw in Correa at shortstop, who is 22, and really, you know, the talk of baseball and a healthy Jason Castro, who's hitting again and hitting for power. It's a pretty solid lineup, and we feel good about it with Evan Gattis DHing and backing up Castro. And so you look at our bullpen. Our bullpen's phenomenal this year. Will Harris making the All-Star game with Altuve. The way that, you know, Ken Giles after the first month of the season really has turned it around. Michael Felice, Jeff Luno, our GM, made some moves, brought some guys up, sent some guys down. And, you know, our bullpen has been very, very solid. And so then you turn to the starting pitching. And, you know, it was hard having Dallas Keuchel win the Cy Young last year and then start out 3-9 and really, you know, not have the stuff he had last year. But he's won his last three ball games. He's keeping us in it. McCullers is back healthy. He was out the first month of the season. You know, Doug Fister's done a good job for us. Feldman's been our swing guy, starter in the bullpen. And then, you know, you throw in McHugh in there and Mike Fiers. We've done really well for ourselves. Now, I think the critics will say we don't have that true flamethrower number one guy. But we know we have more depth than a lot of clubs have with our pitching. And I think this club is built for 162 and that we're going to make the playoffs. And then, you know, we'll have to see what happens because it can be a crapshoot come the playoffs, whether you're in a 1, a 5, or a 7. And we'll see what happens. But I'll take my chances with this club.
Hey, Dallas Keuchel has certainly been the dominant pitcher for the last two seasons for the Astros and, of course, was last year's AL Cy Young Award winner. How close do you think he is to getting back on track 100% and totally into his groove? Because as you're talking about, you want him ready for postseason success. He's your key guy.
Well, you know, look, Dallas had a phenomenal year last year, and he's consistently kept us in ballgames. And I think the difference this year has been his walks. And what the league does is it makes adjustments. You know, there's no secrets. Everybody's got a scouting staff and a video department. And,
right.
You know, there's not a pitch that goes by that's not tracked. And so what teams have done is they've said, look, if Dallas Keuchel can paint the corners and, you know, beat us that way, we'll tip our hat and tell him good game. But we're not going to chase. We're going to try to put ourselves in hitters' counts. And when he's fallen behind guys, you end up having walks, and then when he has to come in, you know, over the middle of the plate, there's guys on base. And so, you know, I think he's had to sort of make the realization that the league's made a little bit of an adjustment to him. But I know he's been working with Brent Strom, our pitching coach. And, you know, the last couple games, although he's still given up a few hits, he's kept the ball in the ballpark, and he's not put guys on base. And that's been the big difference. So, you know, I think Dallas is going to continue to be you know, one of the most, you know, consistent, solid left-handers in Major League Baseball, and I expect big things from the second half of the season.
You know, Reed, just a moment ago, you were talking about the state of your bullpen. It's been crucial to the Astros' success. Tell us some more about Will Harris. I mean, obviously, he's a terrific, a dominant closer, but here's a guy that was overlooked by so many teams, and now he's earned a spot in the All-Star game. It's been a tremendous year.
Well, I think when you look at our Jeff Luhnow, our general manager, and all of our guys that Jeff has brought in, you know, they really get a lot of the credit for being able to go out and find these diamonds in the rough, whether it's someone like, you know, a Will Harris or somebody like a Tony Sipp or even a Colin McHugh. These are guys that a lot of clubs have given up on. And the coaching we have with Craig Bjornsson and then Brent Strom, working with, you know, our guys under Jeff Luhnow, I think we're able to take pitchers and maximize their success. Now, Will Harris has done it on his own. You know, he has worked hard and he's embraced. But this is a guy last year that put up really good numbers. And, you know, this year the fact that, you know, he's got an ERA under one, he's got more strikeouts than he has innings pitched, 38 strikeouts, 37 innings pitched. You know, he's moved into that closer role for us and has been able to lock the games down and really been the difference in May and June versus the April we had. You know, he's a guy that throws in the low 90s, that's got very good control, has great breaking stuff, and is not afraid to pitch inside. And so it's been fun to watch him emerge and see the confidence build with him. And anytime you have somebody that has a whip, you know, over one where, you know, he's striking out guys, you know, and not giving up a lot of hits and not giving up a lot of walks, he's making those guys beat him. And to date, they haven't been able to do it. And it was a joy to get to see him be selected as an All-Star.
The president of the Houston Astros, Reed Ryan, just with us a few more minutes tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And kind of when you step back, I mean, Astro fans, they've got so much to be excited about because so many of your core players, Reed, have not even reached their prime. I mean, the good news is this is still such a young team. You know, we talk about Carlos Correa. He's only 21 and one of the best young players in the game. And you guys just have an amazing farm system.
Yeah, well, Jeff Luhnow gets the credit. He came in here and he made a lot of tough decisions, and it's painful to rebuild, but he really ripped the Band-Aid off and traded away, you know, anybody that was of value at the major league level and stocked our system. And then we've put a lot into our scouting. Mike Elias and our scouting department get a lot of credit because these guys are out, you know, all the time watching video, meeting with players. And you look at a lot of our guys, they've come up through the system.
Always an honor to have the president of the Houston Astros, Reed Ryan, with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We wish you continued success, and the trade deadline, it is just around the corner. We'll be watching, okay?
Thank you very much.
You
Go
bet.
Astros.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead right here in hour number one at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Stay close.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to hour number one at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we continue to get you ready for the 2016 MLB All-Star Game next Tuesday. As promised, we were talking about this earlier, we're going to take time for a book review. It is in bookstores right now. You definitely want to get a copy of it. It highlights and chronicles the early years of the Los Angeles Dodgers 50 years ago, how they survived the adjustments of upheaval, the move from Brooklyn, so many storylines, and such an honor to have with us best-selling author and sports writer Michael Leahy. The title of his new book is The Last Innocence, The Collision of the Turbulent 60s and the Los Angeles Dodgers. It is an amazing read. Good evening and congratulations on the book, Michael.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alyssa.
Well, as I was talking about, you know, it's just beautifully written, very well organized. And I think before we discuss the book, I want to hear about your background. You have a lot of equity built up as a Los Angeles Dodgers fan because you certainly attended a number of games as a young boy when you were living out there in California.
Yeah, I grew up, for the sake of your listeners, I grew up in Los Angeles in the 1960s and early 1970s. And aside from going to the beach all the time, Alyssa, you wanted to go by Dodger Stadium because that's where the action was. It was an era, say the early and mid-1960s, when baseball was king. The Super Bowl, of course, would not arrive until the late 1960s. Remarkably enough, the NBA Finals were not nationally televised in that era. So baseball was king, and there was no more glamorous team in the mid and early 1960s than the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Los Angeles Dodgers won World Championships, World Series titles in 1963 and 1965, and they had the most glamorous collection of players during that time, led by their immortal pitcher, Sandy Koufax, and their electrifying captain and base stealer, Maury Wills, who broke Ty Cobb's single-season stolen base record
sure.
in 1962, was chosen as the National League's most valuable player that year, and utterly transformed baseball in that, Alyssa. He, before Wills, through the 40s and 50s, base stealing had really fallen out of favor. Maury Wills made it into an art form again. He generated runs all the time with it and inspired future legendary base dealers like Lou Brock and Ricky Henderson. So the book looks at Koufax and Wills and five other principal characters from the Dodgers during that period and looks at not only their successes and World Series titles on the field, but the challenges they faced off it. And somebody like Maury Wills, for instance, while Maury was en route to breaking Ty Cobb's record in 1962, he could find himself, as an African-American player, he could find himself on the cover of a national magazine, say Sports Illustrated, 1 week, and find himself denied service at a segregated establishment, a restaurant, or a bar or lounge the next week. So the Civil Rights Act, of course, didn't arrive until 1964. So all these seven principal characters I write about, they faced an array of challenges both on and off the field in that period.
You're listening to the voice of Michael Leahy. He is an award-winning sports writer, author, and, of course, we are shining the spotlight on his brand-new book, The Last Innocence, The Collision of the Turbulent 60s and the Los Angeles Dodgers. And as we were talking about, I mean, the fact that you grew up in California, you know, with that familiarity, how did that benefit you as a writer? Because I'm assuming there was a lot of moments, those big moments that you witnessed personally, I mean.
That's absolutely right, and I was just fortunate. It was dumb luck in that regard, Alyssa. For instance, in 1965, as a 12-year-old, my school year had just begun as a seventh grader, and some friends in early September invited me to a game on what you and I would, in the lexicon of things back then, would have referred to as a school night. Mm-hmm. And I went to the game, and Sandy Koufax was pitching that night against the Chicago Cubs. It was September 9th, 1965. And because it was a so-called school night, it held attendance somewhat down at Dodger Stadium that night. Dodger Stadium, which where typically 40,000 fans or more attended the games, only had 29,000 in the stands that night. And Sandy Koufax threw his no-hit perfect game that night.
Wow.
So I was in attendance at age 12 for that game. And if you can believe it, the game was not televised, either in the Los Angeles or the Chicago markets. There is only a smattering of film of that game, of only the first couple innings. But I was lucky enough to be there, and that being a spectator that night really afforded me the opportunity to write with intimacy about that game and Koufax's performance. They're all, you know, for all of us in life, there are those certain moments that remain on our mind's eye that we can sort of see a half century later. And there are some moments from that game that I can still see in my mind's eye, and that sort of inform the lengthy section in which I write about that perfect game. So, and there were countless other games like that, Alyssa. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I was just, it's just good fortune that I grew up in Los Angeles during a period that I would ultimately write about.
It was a memorable game. Of course, we're visiting with Michael Leahy, award-winning sports writer and author. His new book, go out and get a copy of it, The Last Innocence, The Collision of the Turbulent 60s and the Los Angeles Dodgers. Our interview time was just cut way too short, I promise. Open invitation, Michael. We will definitely have you back, I promise, real soon, okay?
It'd be my great privilege, Alyssa. Many thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Congratulations on the book. Stick around. Much more coming your way in hour number two at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. You get ready. We're going to be talking about NBA free agency.